Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and today we're talking with Rob Notman. He's the Chief Operating Officer and Practice Leader for Career Management for Optimum Talent up in Ottawa, Ontario. Rob, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Dave.
You know, it's good. I didn't hear you say A to everyone.
No, not yet. You will in the next little while, though. I can guarantee it.
Got to have a little fun. And for all those who don't know, Rob is one of our CMA partners up in Canada, KWA partner up there. So I know him pretty well. And so we're going to have some fun today on the show, aren't we, Rob?
You bet.
All right. Well, you know, you are what we call the partner in the North. The Canadian partner, and you know, talent management here in the U.S. In the last 6-8 months has really changed, and we're seeing a real shift from an employer-driven market back to an employee-driven market. Tell me a little about what you're seeing in Canada overall, and is it segmented across the country, or is it all the same?
Well, I'll start with it. It is segmented across the country. It's not. Canada, as you know, is a big country, and similar to the U.S., there's a lot of similarities, actually, between the Canadian employment market and the U.S. employment market. It does differ from region to region. Something I've seen, Dave, in not just in the last 6 months, but our trends in Canada very much follow the U.S. trends in a lot of cases. Because they are such a big trading partner with Canada, there are differences, no question about it, but the similarities, I think, outweigh the differences when it comes to the employment market. So a lot of the changes that you're seeing here in the U.S., I think, would be reflected in Canada for sure.
Is it like 6 months behind, same time? Kind of give me a feel for timing.
Well, it does vary. If you look at the latest major change that was reflected in the Canadian situation was the economic crisis that we all went through a number of years ago. We were fortunate in Canada that we didn't have the same significant problems on the economic side that our cousins to the south of us had. So we didn't have the same dip in the economy that that many spots in the U.S. Experienced because of the mortgage crisis and so forth. But at the same time, around that same period of time, our Canadian dollar became evaluated a lot higher. So for a period of time, it was on par with the U.S. dollar, which is certainly a benefit to Canadian exporters. Is it more of a benefit when the Canadian dollar is lower, which it is now. So a lot of our Canadian exports, our manufacturing sector is actually benefiting by the fact that the Canadian dollar is below what it has been the last couple of years.
Well, you know, the market between the U.S. and, you know, and Canada is incredibly strong. And we are going to break this down a little bit today, if we can, in terms of career transition, in terms of what you're seeing on the talent management side, and then maybe what we're seeing on the coaching or assessment side. We'll kind of break it down into different segments. But as a general rule, where are some of the trends that you're seeing in terms of overall hiring, overall talent management in general? Let's start with some general cases and some numbers, if you have them, in terms of what it looks like across Canada and today.
Sure, and I very much like the term talent management because we can look at the whole cycle for your HR folks, that your listeners, and how that impacts everything from attraction to retention to the dismissal side, the outplacement side. And if I start with the idea of breaking it down from a geographic region, in the last 6 months, the drop in the oil price has affected a number of areas in Canada, in particular west. So our oil-producing provinces have been affected by the drop in oil prices. So we're seeing on the outplacement side an uptick in our business. So more organizations are going through downsizings and restructuring based on that economic situation. And what we are seeing as a different trend in today's marketplace, Dave, is that organizations can be differentiated from a perspective of how they want to treat their employees when they're leaving the organization. So some organizations are faced with, well, we want to help our employees get reemployed, but we don't have a lot of resources to put after that, so we're going to go with a quick and dirty type of approach, and in which case the cost of the career transition program comes into play heavily. So we are seeing a change relative to a number of organizations as to how they want to treat their employees on the way out, and using technology more effectively to try to support those individuals.
Well, there's no question that technology is playing more and more role in every talent market as we currently have. Tell me a little bit about, so that people get a feel first before we move into these trends, tell me a little bit more about KWA. Tell me a little about Optimum Talent. Tell me a little bit about, where you come from, so that people will get a feel for who you are and why you're talking about it today.
Right. Well, and I guess the easiest way to focus on this without a graphic is that the KWA Partners organization exists across Canada. So we have a common platform and a common approach from a quality perspective on how we provide what we call career management assistance. That's everything from outplacement to retirement planning to individual dismissals to plant closures. It really covers all of those kind of situations that the HR community has to face when they have to let people go. So the KWA Partners organization has 22 offices across Canada. They're regionally run so that we do have the ability of the different perspectives in the marketplace. The East Coast, our Atlantic provinces, have a different economic model than perhaps where I come from, which is Ottawa, which is the capital of Canada. So we have a heavy federal government employee base. Out West is where a lot of our resources are based. So we have some very large international organizations that are established there. And on the outplacement side, they're looking at giving a consistent kind of service to individuals not only across Canada, but maybe even internationally, which is where you and I have met, through the international Canada.
Correct, yes.
One of the things we are noticing this time around this economic cycle that does tend to follow the U.S., as you mentioned, probably in a 6 to 12-month period, is we can actually differentiate from an HR perspective, a human resources perspective, how organizations are looking at coming through any kind of downsizing. And by that, I've already mentioned the technology change, which happens all throughout talent management. But we are finding there are more and more organizations that, on the best employer perspective, they want to be perceived and they actually want to treat their employees as if they're best employers, because they will want to hire individuals and be able to attract and retain them. So they're very conscious about how they're being perceived in the marketplace, especially when they have to go through a downsizing. So one of the things that we've seen is that a number of organizations we deal with very much like to be seen as a best employer, in which case they want to make sure that they treat their employees leaving the organization almost as well, if not as well, as when they attract them to come to the organization. And I think that's something that, not that we would segment the market that way directly, but we are seeing there's certain employers and their HR people that say, we want to make sure that when the employees leave, they're treated well, so that the remaining employees understand that, appreciate that, and should we get in a situation where we need to hire people back, they would say good things about us.
Well, I think that's an important aspect of it, right? Because the market is now becoming more an employee-driven market. And because social media and all the other aspects of risk mitigation are something that you have to look at today, I think companies are looking and taking this a little more seriously than they may have had in the last couple of years, really.
I agree with you 100%. I won't name the company, obviously, but there was an organization that had to go through a significant downsizing and restructuring. It was a U.S. firm that had purchased a Canadian company, and they went through the whole process of providing individuals with appropriate career transition assistance. But what they missed out on, unfortunately, was the with the survivors, the folks that remained, there wasn't a real strong indication from the senior management group, including the human resources folks, that they would matter to them going forward. And that really, really hurt the morale of the remaining employees. I hate to use the term survivors, but it is used in our industry. Those individuals that remain that have to pick up the slack from the people who have left. And unfortunately, their turnover rate went much higher after the termination of these individuals, because employees said, wait a minute, I can go somewhere else. I can I can go and find an employer that's going to value me and my contributions more than I feel this new company is going to do. So it's one thing to provide people with a severance package and some assistance. It's another one to send the right message that going forward, they're going to help rebuild and they're the future of the organization.
No, I think that's true today. I mean, people are really looking at what can they do. Now, there are financial considerations that do play today. And I think that as we had a gentleman on last week, he talked about succession planning, right? And he talked about how, you know, 2008, 2009 really shook the market in terms of what people were expecting. And it has changed the dynamic of what succession planning is today and the urgency that people are really seeing about it. And part of this is the financial side because of, as you said, the hits that were taken. And even though it wasn't seen as hard in Canada, I know there was certainly some effect. But it has changed a little bit the psyche of the HR profession in terms of the C-suite as well.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. And not to add another layer of complexity into the discussion, but it's a different world for our Gen Ys, the younger generation coming into the workforce. They're a different breed, and I think a lot has been said about the expectations of the emerging workforce, the cultural differences, the international component of immigration into the workplace. There's a lot of different challenges that face the HR folks out there, not the least of which is how do you get the 20 to 25 year old new employee to engage with your organization the way the boomers used to.
No, and that is a big part of it. And you also see Generation Z now just starting to enter the market, and they also have their own challenges and needs and desires. But I think to your point, the millennials are now going to be taking over some of the biggest market share of the jobs out there because Gen X is such a small group. Yeah. You're seeing as the boomers retire, the millennials are really starting to take over some key roles, and that is going to change the mindset a little bit of what people think and a little bit of retraining that needs to go on.
You're absolutely correct. And not to, on the other end of the scale, we are seeing certainly in Canada, and I would imagine in the U.S. as well, a lot of those boomers aren't retiring when they thought they were going to retire for good reasons. Some of them are health reasons that they're living longer, and the other ones are not so positive, and they got to work longer to make the money they thought they were going to need to retire. So a lot of those boomers that would have maybe left earlier are hanging in the marketplace, and they're not. We don't have mandatory retirement ages in Canada, so in some cases that can be a real challenge for an HR professional. Is how do you handle that aging boomer who doesn't want to go?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. There are differences or regulatory differences or governmental law differences between the U.S. and Canada. And one of the ones you talk about is in the career transition area where it is not required by U.S. law. But there is some requirements in Canada, correct?
Yes, that's correct. The I think I said at the beginning of the show that there's probably more similarities then there would be differences. And certainly in our international connections, which you and I have been involved with some time, you know, there are labor law differences from country to country. The Canadian labor law versus the U.S. labor law, there's probably more similarities than you'd find with any other country, I would think. That being said, the approach that we take when it comes to the downsizing component is there is employment insurance and there is social support that is given by either the provincial, which would be similar to your state, or our federal government. So the whole social component of how do you take care of people when you no longer need them is more ingrained, I would think, in the Canadian culture than perhaps you'd see in certain states.
Well, you talk about the fact that Canada in general is a little bit more social, socialistic than the U.S. That's just a fact in terms of the way they look at things. So do you see do people feel a little more entitled because they're in a sense entitled to certain things that they may not have? And does that change when people have to go from the U.S. to Canada or back and forth? Do you hear that a lot?
Yeah, we do. The way it was put to me from folks that have worked in the European sector or the European EU, I'm thinking of, as well as versus North American versus Canada, the U.S., they see Canada kind of in between from a liberal or social perspective, what some of the social laws would be in the European, certain European countries versus what they are in the U.S. So we're kind of liberal light, I guess, might be an approach, I would say. And folks coming up from the U.S., and often we'll have in a merger or an acquisition, U.S. senior management who come in, and they do find the same, wow, this is a different situation. There is no employment at will in Canada. So we have to be aware of what the social norms are and what the reaction from employees would be, both when they hire and also if they have to terminate.
It does make people think differently, right, in terms of how they handle terminations, how they handle progressive discipline, how they mm-hmm. handle hiring in general, because it's a little harder to make a mistake in terms of hiring and fix that mistake.
That's correct. Yeah, there is the whole due process. If you're in a non-unionized environment, it's certainly more straightforward, and I would think you would find the private sector firms in Canada would have similar type situations to the U.S. If you've got someone that you don't need, how do you take care of that individual? Where we are seeing a shift, though, is laws aside, the cost to hire and the cost to terminate, or the cost of making a bad hire, is going up. So from a human resources perspective, you've got to be able to attract, evaluate, assess, and hire the right people. If you don't, it's very expensive to not just to let them go by making a wrong hire, but now you've got to go back at it again. And even though it is turning into an employee-based or a buyer's market, it's still an expensive proposition. So I'm encouraged by that from an HR perspective, in that it means the relevancy and the importance of very effective HR policies and influence on senior management is definitely there.
We're talking with Rob Notman. He's the Chief Operating Officer and Practice Leader for Career Management at Optimum Talent. And we're talking about Canadian trends in talent management. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Rob Notman, Chief Operating Officer, Practice Leader for Career Management for Optimum Talent in good old Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. You know, I almost feel like I should start singing, "Oh, Canada." Never mind. You know, trust me, nobody on this that ought to get people to change the dial. If ever,
that's right. Unless I sing in French, maybe I should.
Yeah, well, you know, you're right. That's a very good point. All right. Well, we're talking about career transition. We're talking about hiring the right talent. And we're talking about some Canadian trends. And we were just talking before we went to the break about some of the law differences and some of the challenges that our Canadian partners have in terms of hiring people, because it is much harder to get rid of people, honestly, because there's no at will in terms of Canada. And it's a little more socialistic in terms of, or European, if you want to call it, in terms of the way it's thinking. Tell me a little bit about what great hiring managers, what great companies do today in terms of solving or helping with the hiring process. What do they do to try to solve that problem?
That's a good one, Dave. I think it starts with the understanding of the cost of making a bad hire. So from an HR perspective, having worked in the field for a number of years, you always have the hiring manager, I want to get a good person, and I need them right away. They rarely come up and say, I'm thinking of hiring someone in the next 6 months. Can you start looking for someone? So there's always a pressure to hire. And the typical response in the past has been, put an ad, find some people, do an interview, the fit seems right, do some references, and can they start Monday? And even though that pressure is still there, and the best evaluation of future performance is past performance, what we are finding is that the more progressive HR folks in our market are looking at a more systematic way of ensuring that they're not going to make a mistake. So that's not just relying on a one interview or references from friends who know friends. It's focusing now on casting the net very wide, so you get a broad perspective of candidates through social media. It also helps to build your brand if you are advertising regularly, you're a growth company. Assessing the talent, looking at future potential, not just for the job that you're hiring, but for where that individual is going to be. A colleague of mine who is one of our senior coaches in our Toronto office said, you know, when you're looking at a C-suite type of hire, that's $1 million decision. And I'm not talking about salary. I'm talking about that individual, if it's the right one, is then going to make decisions that are going to have an impact on your bottom line for years to come. If you make the wrong decision, then you might not come to that conclusion 6 months to a year from then, and then you've got to let the person go, and then you've got to hire someone else. So it's a huge monetary decision, in which case, don't treat it like it's we need to have one quick interview. I like the way you answered those questions. Can you start tomorrow?
Well, you know, companies, as you have said, rarely say they have time to look at this. That does happen periodically, but they're always in a hurry. So, you know, do you see legal ways or trendy ways to really help an organization cut down on the time and at least have assess for a better fit in terms of their organization?
Well, I'll throw out a couple of thoughts that come to mind. One is taking the time to look at what talent you have internally. So if you have individuals that you've invested time and effort and training dollars in, then look closely at where those people can evolve to. So look first at what you've got. It's like if you're on a desert island and you've got three or four people and someone needs to be a laborer, you try to find the person that's going to be the best laborer. So a talent assessment of what you've got internally is very important. It's worth the money to invest, not only to determine where those people can go, but they also see it as, wow, here's an organization that cares about what I might want to do and where I might want to grow. And when we talked earlier about the next generation, the Gen Ys, they love that. Here's an organization that cares for me. I'm not going to be reading ads because they're interested in where I want to go. So that whole talent assessment, knowing what you've got. Now, flipping to the recruitment side, looking at how are we going to evaluate what is key to be a successful employee in my company. So it's not just whether they do a good interview, whether they have a good resume or have good references. It's what are the key factors that are going to help this individual blend in and do well in our organization. So a little bit more knowledge about what are the key factors that you're hiring for, and that's what I would say would be the two things I'd start looking at before I'd run out and start hiring.
So you're talking a little bit of what we would call talent succession planning to determine who you have and what it's all about. Are there tools that you find effective in this use?
Yeah, there are a number. There are a number in the marketplace. You, as an HR professional, you want to look at what internal evaluation systems you have first. So rather than go out and buy everything, you might look at what are the things that we have now that we use to assess our people? Our performance evaluation system, the records we have on file, their ability to seek additional learning or training in the organization. And then I say, where are the gaps? So assessment tools, psychometrics are very effective if it's something that the senior management team buys into. I know an organization that we've dealt with, we have a product called Pathfinder, the Pathfinder Career System, and the executives that take that themselves now have a feeling for where their strengths and weaknesses are, where their gaps are, and it's a lot easier to hire against the gaps when they're looking at bringing in individuals. So they find that assessment very effective for their existing teams, and then it makes it that much easier to hire against where the gaps are going forward.
Rob, tell me about one of the success stories you've had in terms of working with an organization to have them, you know, see the value of using a great talent tool as well as using a great talent overview. And they've been able to retain talent and hire great talent.
Well, I'm thinking off the top of my head of an organization that I can think of two examples. The one I'll talk about that's probably had the most dramatic effect is an organization that had a significant turnover in their project management field. So they needed skills in that area, and they had a lot of folks that were doing long-range as well as short-range project management. And they brought our firm in to focus on what are the key attributes that a good project manager has. And then they did both individual assessment and team assessment to basically get a feel for where they stacked up against other organizations. And that was using the tool I mentioned in terms of Pathfinder, because we were able to compare how their project management group fared against high performers in the project management field. And then they were able to share that with individuals on a confidential basis to determine where they were going in the future, and then used it most directly against hiring options in the future. So before they would hire anybody into the project management field, they'd have an assessment done together with the other interviewing components to determine whether that this individual is going to fit in with the group and contribute going forward. So it was very much a strategic type of exercise.
Well, you know, I think that's important, right, that they start the process. Can you tell me... what's the first step in determining that for an organization? What's the first thing that a company should go out and look for that you say, okay, I'm ready to make and look and assess my talent. I'm ready to do it. What do I do?
Well, it's interesting because I think of, you said first thing, but I think of two things. One's internal, the other one's external. Internally would be, as I mentioned, evaluate your competencies currently. What are the systems that you have in place? And let's say, for example, you have a succession plan component, job evaluation side, you're not going to throw all that out and start over. You're going to try to bring something in that complements that. On the other hand, if you're saying, your listeners may out there saying, well, we don't have any of that. We've been growing quickly, or we've gone through a change and we need to start from scratch, then you want to look for a bona fide tool that's been tested over time. You don't want someone to come and say, hey, I've come up with this new fill out these 15 questions and they'll give you a feel for whether the person fits or not. You don't want anything that's not tested and not done over time. So there are a number of tools out there, Pathfinder, again, being one that has been around for a long time and has excellent predictability of success components to it. So I would look at the effectiveness of the tool, the tried and true components of it, and as you mentioned, you know, what are the examples of organizations beforehand that have used it with effectiveness? So
we're looking at trying to have people making sure they don't make a hiring mistake, right? I mean, HR professionals say themselves all the time, I hope I'm getting this one right. I hope it's the right fit.
Yeah.
I'm hiring with my gut. I'm hiring with some tools. I'm making this happen. All right, we get them on board, and it's just not the right fit. Something's not right. The hiring manager is like, what have we done? And so people are starting to think to themselves, do I coach them? Do I terminate them? In your system, obviously, the word terminate conjures a whole bunch of processes that have to go because you can't just let them go.
Yeah.
How do you then say, okay, this is the right person that I need to coach? How do you make that determination?
Yeah, that's a really good one. And it's interesting because we often see that coaching is not something you should look at as a remedial approach. In other words, if you've got someone who's not performing or they're not looking, it's not looking like they're going to fit in, to throw coaching at them at that point is probably not your best solution. It's a matter of managing that performance. So if you know early on that this person is not going to work out, you certainly want to make them aware of that and give them opportunities to improve their performance. But if it's not working out, it's not working out. What I would look at, though, is how many other situations like that have happened. And maybe it's systemic. Maybe there's a problem in the organization. It's not the individual. If you're bringing in good people and they're flaming out in 6 to 12 months, it's probably a time to look in the mirror. I don't just mean the HR people, but the organization itself. On the coaching side, we often see coaching can be used very, very effectively from a retention strategy. You've got a good individual. You don't want to lose them, or you can't afford to lose them, but they have some shortfalls, perhaps in their people skills, perhaps in they've taken on a new role. You know, a classic is the best salesman in the office doesn't make a good VP of sales.
That's
but often
so
that's
true.
Where they end up.
Yeah, so, so true.
Same with engineering. You know, best engineer, worst thing you can do is make them a director of engineering. I shouldn't say it that way, but they need. That's where coaching can come into play. I've got a really valuable resource. The resource wants to do more. I need them to do more. But I can't sit down and do a performance review and tell them I need you to do more of this. I really need them to get a professional coach to assist them in determining where they can maximize their performance for the organization. That's where coaching is a real windfall for the human resources community.
You know, I think that individuals sometimes say that there's money and financial, and sometimes they go, how do you measure results of coaching, right? The ROI on coaching is something that is a challenge sometimes for people to see short term, especially when you're talking to a CFO or CEO who wants an immediate change. You know, how do you measure that intangible?
Yeah, that is a challenge. I think it needs to be measured. In other words, I don't think you would embrace a coaching assignment, and I'm talking about one here, Dave, that would be funded by the organization. So the organization is providing the coaching service to an individual or individuals in the organization. They're paying for it. So therefore, they need to see results. So whatever coach you get to help the individual needs to understand right off the bat, what are we trying to achieve here? Now, the confidentiality should not be compromised, and that any discussions between a coach and the coachee remain with the coach, remain between the two of them. But at the outset, you want to determine what are we trying to accomplish here? What does the individual want out of the coaching assessment and involvement? And what's the organization hoping to achieve? It can't just be, I had a good meeting with my coach. I felt better after I met with him. I mean, I'm not knocking coaching that for coaching's sake, and a lot of people will get life coaching to get their life in order or feel better, but business coaching or executive coaching, whole different ballgame.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB and presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Rob Notman. That's right, the COO of Optimum Talent. And he is going to be talking to us continuing today of the talent management situation and trends that are happening from the good old North Country, Canada. That's right, Rob. We're holding the whole country in your hands in terms of responsibility today, okay?
All right.
That's great. All right, so we've talked a little bit about some of the trends having to do with career transition. We've talked a little bit about coaching and assessing in terms of what you're seeing up there. Tell me a little bit about what people are hiring today in Canada. What are some of the real hot hiring spots in terms of the market that people just can't find great talent in?
Well, I would I'd start, Dave, with the whole where the market is growing. So healthcare would be a big one, and you and I've had this discussion before, the healthcare system in Canada versus the healthcare system in the US. But regardless of whether you're talking a certain system or who funds it, people are getting older, people are living longer, more work is going into how you care for people, and health conscious society, no matter how you stretch it, that whole component of that growing field, whether it's biomedical devices, whether it's pharmaceuticals, whether it's healthcare. Elder care is a big, big growing area. It's a big part of our budget in Canada. The what we spend on healthcare, what we spend on education are our two biggest components. So that area itself is definitely growing. A term we use, I don't know if this is used in other areas, it's one I've coined before, we call it the MUSH sector, which is the municipalities, universities, social services, and hospitals. That whole field, which is typically heavily unionized. It's also the type of field that when people join it, they stay in it. Teachers don't, you know, they usually stay to retirement, so it's got longevity. That whole sector is not easy to get into, and not everybody does well in a sector that like the MUSH sector, as we call it, because it can be somewhat bureaucratic, and promotion is done based on seniority only, those type of situation. But that would be the one that strikes me as something we would see as a North American trend, not just a Canadian trend.
No, I agree with you 100%, especially in the healthcare area. I think certainly when you're talking about municipalities, I think we're starting to see a little bit of, we've seen a lot of growth in the years there, and there is a little bit of price compression that's starting to happen in the municipality area.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly we're also seeing it in the engineering sector in the U.S. I mean, the engineering area, the technology area are still very, very heavily being sought after for great talent today.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%. We have, we used to call the Ottawa area actually Silicon Valley North. Now, I know we've been called American Junior before as Canada in general, but certainly Silicon Valley North was the Ottawa marketplace where the telecommunications field has been very, very positive. It's taken a hit too. Nortel, as a lot of organizations know, Canadian firm that ran into the crisis back in the 2000s. But we are seeing a definite growth in the small to medium-sized high-technology companies where it's not so much the ability to build a product, it's the ability to get the new idea. So innovation would be one of the key factors that people are looking to get as a skill. And how do you evaluate innovation?
Yeah, we get asked that a lot when we're looking for talent. They say we want someone innovative, and the question then becomes how do you ask for innovation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's one thing to say you're innovative, and it's another to be innovative. So it really does come down to things you've done in the past to show that you can be innovative, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does. And your ability to get that across. I mean, if we look at it from the perspective of the individuals going into the interview, you're not going to say, here, invent something in the middle of the interview, but you could go in certainly with your ability to tell a story, your ability to talk about circumstances in the past that might be needed in the future. And a lot of times, and if I use the engineering computer science background, folks that have a strong background in math may not be as extroverted in their getting their messages across. I don't want to overly categorize that, but the ability to hire someone who's innovative, you need them to certainly express how they've done that in the past. And that's usually done in an interview.
Well, we really do talk a lot about that, the fact that the only thing that differentiates you from somebody else is what you've done. And if you can't communicate what differentiates from you from what you've done, you really are at a disadvantage.
Oh, big time, big time. We often tend to our clients who are in transition that, you know, there's different blocks or hurdles they have to get over to get a job. The biggest one is at the interview. And a lot of folks will say, well, when I go in the interview, I better make sure I let them know everything I've done and that I have the background, the experience, the language capabilities, and so forth. And what we tell them is, no, you don't really, because they wouldn't be interviewing you unless they already knew that you had the potential to do the job. In most cases, if it's an HR person that's done their homework, they're not just going to interview anybody off the street. They're going to screen based on background, experience, and accomplishments. But when you're in the interview, what they're really looking for is, does this individual have what it takes to work in this organization? And they're going to evaluate that mostly on personality, approach to the interview, ability to ask good questions. All those things come out in an interview as to, you know, you interview for background, you hire for fit.
No, that's so true. And fit is that intangible, right? It's that, you know, that gut feel, that perception that this person can really, really make it here. and as you said, have it as a million-dollar hire, right? That's the type of person that really we have to look at and say, every time I make a hiring decision, is this person going to make a difference here?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, David, I see from an HR perspective, this has been around for a while, but it's probably even getting more, certainly more prominent in the clients that I deal with. They will expect the hiring manager to make a decision of whether the individual has the capabilities or not. But the human resources individual usually asks the questions that are going to get to the real behavioral type aspects of whether this individual is going to fit in our organization. So the whole behavioral type interviewing questions that may not have anything to do with specific background or experiences, just to get a feel for the individual's style, approach, that's a big, big component in making a hiring decision.
Well, it goes back to, and I know it's a tried and true method, but it's all about, you know, looking in the person's eye, firm handshake, having a smile. And my gosh, a smile is so important. Just something to connect with that individual and really make them understand that you're there because you want to be there and that you are connecting to them personally. It makes a difference.
Yeah, a big need for closure, too. I know that it's not really your... We try to indicate that, I mean, you are selling yourself in an interview, and you can't ask for the order at the end of the meeting, say, you know, when can I start? But in effect, we do tell our candidates who are going for interview, you want to make sure at the end of the interview that the people that did the interview, whether it's a panel or a one-on-one, they have no question about your ability to perform the job and your enthusiasm for it. Because most people at the end of the interview, it's not a fun situation to go through, are saying, I can hardly wait till this thing ends so I can go home. And that's the exact time where you want to put the pedal to the metal, so to speak, and say, you know, this was a worthwhile interview. I hope I've shown you what I've been able to do today, and I'm certainly enthusiastic about next steps in the process. So anything along that.
Yeah, probably not a good thing to say. You know, really, I just wasted a lot of time today, and I'm so sorry that I even took up your time, and I think I'm just going to leave.
Sure you'll have somebody better you can find.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that'll make it happen. That'll be just outstanding. I'm sure there are times we've all thought that. That's a separate issue altogether in terms of it. You know, we've talked a little bit about now the trends in terms of some hiring. Tell me a little bit about a search process that an organization should think about in terms of finding that great talent.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly the thing I would look at is what are your resources. So if you have an organization that has an internal capability to both attract, screen, interview, and hire people, then you know you want to make sure you use the best of the resources that you have internally. What we are finding now, though, is you know that's a lot of time and cost and effort, whereas if you deal with an outside organization that can complement your internal resources, by all means, that's a cost-effective move. Certainly the move with technology, LinkedIn is a very, very effective tool for at least finding people. So how do you utilize your internal resources? What would you use from a social media standpoint? And when do you bring in the professional to streamline the process and make it a cost-effective exercise? That's what I would say to all HR folks is determine what's the most cost-effective and also successful structure I want to do in my hiring.
Well, you know, there's the question, right? So how much of your time do you need to put into this search? You know, the days of just posting something online and having it work and getting the best talent isn't really today. Most of the people who are working are not looking on the job boards. It's about finding talent that's out there that's working, that's really maybe even slightly happy. And it's about trying to find that person or that individual that can make a difference for you because they're working and because they're happy. And it's something different for them to make a difference in.
Yeah. I you know, you've heard the term, it's been around for a while, the whole war for talent. And in times of when the economy goes down, you may not feel like there's a war for talent. There's unemployment rates are up, you're gonna you know pick and choose, open the door, and the people will flood in. I don't think that's happening now. It certainly isn't in Canada. And the future that we see, the futurists out there are saying if there isn't a war for talent now, there soon will be one. So how you differentiate your hiring practices, how you differentiate the attractiveness that people will find in your organization. There's some firms I know that do such a great job at that, and they have good social media that the people will find them. They'll say, there's a company I want to work for. So really taking advantage of how you can differentiate your hiring process, your brand, and your internal resourcing, because you can have individuals that the best ambassadors for your company are people that talk about how great the company is.
No, you're absolutely right. We're talking with Rob Notman, Chief Operating Officer, Practice Leader for Career Management for Optimum Talent in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB and presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Rob Notman, Chief Operating Officer from Optimum Talent in Ottawa, Canada. And we're talking about trends in Canadian talent management. Rob, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So we've talked a little bit about, you know, a whole bunch of things having to do with career transition. We've talked about hiring. We've talked about assessing. We've talked about coaching. We talked about mush. And for anybody who didn't just join this show and they go, mush? Yes, you're going to have to go to the show, hrpowerhour.com, after the site. Click on the show and re-listen. That's what you're going to have to do to know what mush is. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to let everybody, what you tell everybody a little bit, is a little bit about Optimum Talent and kind of why you're on the show from that perspective today.
Sure. Great. You actually covered it off nicely when you listed the things that we've talked about, because we do see Optimum Talent is a full-spectrum HR management firm that corporations can call upon to help them, whether they've got a hiring challenge, whether they're looking at developing their talent through coaching or assessment, right through to those situations where all HR people have probably had to deal with, and that's when you have to let people go. How do you do that in a humane way, in a supportive way that is going to look good for your company and is going to help the individuals themselves get reabsorbed or back into another career?
Well, that's good. And your firm is all across all of Canada, of course?
Well, the KWA Partners component of it, Dave, is the career transition business, the career management business. They're across Canada. Optimum Talent is in the eastern part of Canada, central Ontario, Quebec, and into the Atlantic provinces. That's the Optimum Talent brand that has those different talent management services I mentioned.
No, that's perfect. And, you know, we've just gotten back a few weeks ago from the trip in Nice, where we went to a conference having to do with our Bora partners. A lot of great information that came out of there. One of the things we talked a lot about, of course, is employee engagement and how exactly people stay engaged and go through the process. So tell me, what's your take on employee engagement today in Canada?
Well, it's an emerging need. It's something that's been there all along, but it's becoming more important now in that the cost to bring in new people, the cost to let people go if you've made the wrong decision, it can really hinder a company's budget. So how do you get the employees that you do hire, how do you get them to engage with the organization to keep them there as long as they would like to be there and as long as you need them? So that whole component of getting them to buy into the strategy that the organization has and to maximize their career while they're with the organization. That does relate, Dave, I think, very much to the fact that the younger generation, the Gen Ys, are not going to be joining a company and staying on for their 25, 30, 40 years and getting the gold watch. That they've seen their parents or their parents' parents go through many different jobs through the economic ups and downs. And the general trend of the younger employee is, I'm here for a good time, not necessarily a long time. And therefore, while they're there, you want to make sure they're engaged.
When you're talking about engagement and retaining talent, How important is it for an organization to communicate that properly?
Very. And one of the common mistakes is organizations in the past have felt that it's their responsibility to train, develop all employees. That is it's up to them. I'm almost like a responsibility to provide training to everyone so they can all advance. And that's shifted now because the cost of training, the cost of development is so high that what you want to do is you want the employees to manage their own careers. So that whole career self-management component, we want individuals to self-identify, indicate where they wish to go. Not everybody wants to get ahead. Not everybody wants to be in the vice president's or director or manager's chair even. So don't force them into a situation where they have to do that. Have them self-assess and determine, if I want to get ahead and I want to grow in this organization, here's what I need to do. Here's the commitment I need to make to do that. And the organization can help them along the way, no question, but it should be very much from a kind of a bipartisan agreement. I, as an employee, want to get ahead, so I'm going to dedicate myself to do that.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right in terms of self-identifying. Employees have to take more of that responsibility on themselves today, don't they?
Well, they do, and recognizing that it's not easy, I mean, the whole continuous learning is something that everybody needs to do. It's not just I've got my high school diploma, my college diploma, or my university education, and that's my education stops then. It's changing all the time. I saw a statistic that for a first-year engineering student in the university level, when they go through their four-year degree, by the fourth year, over 50% of what they learned in year one is going to be changed. So the need for continuous learning is there. And when are you going to do that? It has to be done partly on company time, I think, but also on the dedicated employee time. And that's not easy to do when you're balancing family, other pressures, and the Gen Y folks have told us that, you know, they want it all whenever they can get it.
No, you're absolutely right. That's absolutely correct. Rob, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, HR Power Hour. You know, you've really given us some good overview of the Canadian difference in terms of what it is, in terms of comparing to the U.S., some of the trends that are happening there. While they're similar, there are some differences. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. And anybody that has come to the show knows that they can go to hrpowerhour.com right after this. They can find Rob's information. They can click and talk to him at that time.
Thanks very much, David. It's been fun.
And now your HR tip of the week. According to careerusa.org, interview jitters do happen. To make sure you don't walk into your next big interview in a sweaty and nervous mess, here's a few strategies to try out prior to the big day. 1. Meditate and breathe. 2. Eat a banana. 3. Exercise. 4. Visualize success. 5. Do a power pose. 6. Smile like you mean it. 7. Practice, practice, practice. Those are some great career tips on your HR Power Hour. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Nancy Morris, Communications and Member Relations Director for the Maine Health Management Coalition. She's going to be talking about high deductible health plans, the good, the bad, and the alternatives. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.